First, advice columnists like Dear Abby, Ann Landers, and Miss Manners are probably familiar to you.
But what about Lord Chesterfield or William Alcott? And are people like Benjamin Franklin and Dale Carnegie part of that group?
Americans are fascinated by advice columns and have been for 300 years. Jessica Weisberg traces that history in her new book, Asking for a Friend, Three Centuries of Advice on Life, Love, Money, and Other Burning Questions from a Nation Obsessed. Jessica, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what are the basic elements of an advice column?
Well, a big component of the advice column is that people stay anonymous. And I think that was the large appeal of them for many years. When the first advice column came out in 1690 in England, it was a rare chance for people to ask any question they wanted to and to not suffer any shame for it. And that was a really huge appeal. And I think that advice columnists early on really saw that this really freed people up to sort of share their darkest questions. And I think that trend has really continued today on the internet.
And the title of your book is Asking for a Friend. Did people often pose their questions as, well, this isn't about me, but I'm concerned about someone close to me?
Of course they did. And, you know, there's that level of obfuscation that really allows people to ask the questions that are really burning in their hearts.
According to the subtitle of your book, we've been turning to advice columnists or advice givers for 300 years, even a little more than that. What are some of the examples of the earliest ones?
Sure. So I mentioned John Dunton already. John Dunton, I would say, is the creator of the form. And he started a newsletter in 1690 in England. And he started it with his two brothers-in-laws, but they pretended that they were sort of 26 wise men. And people kind of bought it for a long time. And people asked them all sorts of questions about religion and God and the cosmos. And they largely made things up. But I think they also gave people great comfort because they could ask questions about sex and love and relationships that they maybe weren't that comfortable bringing to their pastor. And then other ones in America that I include later on is Lord Chesterfield, who was an etiquette writer who wrote a book that sort of became a bestseller in America right around the time of the American Revolution. And another one I read about early on in the book is William Alcott, who is an early dieting expert.
Tell us more about that. What were people asking advice on about dieting way back then?
Sure. Well, William Alcott was a strong believer that the vegetarian diet was not only the healthiest thing for you physiologically, but also the healthiest thing for you spiritually. And he had a real political bent to his idea on diet. He thought that if more Americans became vegetarian, slavery would end. And there was a practical part of this argument because he just thought that like a lot of the animal products came from the South. But then there was just a more spiritual aspect of his argument that by sort of thinking about the suffering of animals, you would also be thinking about the suffering of human beings. So he really argued that the vegetarian diet would sort of allow you to live forever, and it would make you bring you a better communion with God and sort of a better society overall. And I think what was sort of interesting about him, and I think in a way he's sort of a predecessor for a lot of the diet crazes we see today, is it's so much more about diet. It's about lifestyle and about community and about making the world a better place. And you hear a lot of that in a lot of the diets that are marketed to us today.
Tell us about the 19th century, because there was so much going on, societal changes, industrial revolution. You just talked about the South, the Civil War. What did the advice column or the predecessors of the advice column look like in the 19th century?
Sure. The 19th century, I think in the 19th century, there was, right after the Civil War, there was a huge surge in the popularity of spiritualists. And a lot of the reason for that was because a lot of people lost loved ones during the Civil War, and they wanted people to help who could sort of bridge the gap between themselves and the dead. And so I think there was a lot in the sort of the late 19th century, a lot of spiritualists and a lot of advice that sort of allowed you to sort of connect with someone who was deceased. And I think that it was sort of a predecessor for a lot of the advice I think we see today. I think astrology has become more popular. I live in New York City and there are psychics on every other block. And so you really see that in the 19th century. And the other thing that starts in the 19th century is that a lot of these spiritualists were women. And then as the 20th century starts, you see many more women giving advice in sort of prominent publications. And the earliest chapter of the book, the sort of revolutionary period and before, it's always men. It's always white men giving people advice on how to live. And then what you see throughout the book is sort of the inclusion of more women giving that, being put in that position of power. And as time goes on, that the sort of it becomes a field that's accessible to more people.
Jessica Weisberg is an award-winning writer and producer. We're talking about her new book, which is Asking for a Friend, Three Centuries of Advice on Life, Love, Money, and Other Burning Questions from a Nation Obsessed. And Jessica, you just took us into the 20th century, and it seems like in many ways the advice columns really blossomed last century. Why do you think that was? You said that women became the more prominent advice givers. Were there other factors that you think led to that?
Yeah, I think there were. I think there were a lot of changes for women in the 20th century. And you see a lot of the advice columnists I profile in the book sort of on the cutting edge of those changes. The first woman that I profile from the 20th century, she was right at the turn of the 20th century. And she wrote under the pen name Dorothy Dix. And you can really see her sort of fielding questions from women who are, you know, just grappling with whether they want to become a suffragist and grappling with the decision about working and whether a wife should work. And there's lots of questions about abortion and reproductive rights and marriage. And I think it was, you know, the 20th century was a huge time for women's rights. And you really see people sort of trying to suss out what's normal and what's right and what's weird, and looking to advice columnists to sort of suss out the norms of our society as they change.
Well, and that's one thing I really wondered about is whether advice columns tended to shore up the prevailing cultural positions and norms, or if they played a role in changing attitudes.
That's a really good question. And I think that one of the things I found in the book is that a lot of the people who are more activists, Dorothy Dix was one of them. She was a very active suffragist. But in her column, she kind of toes sort of a more centrist line. She's sort of not using it to sort of advance her own political agenda. And I think that was... You see that the most advice columnists, at least the most popular ones, you see their ideas change as time goes on. And you see them sort of feeling responsible for sort of vocalizing a centrist position, for sort of trying to articulate the norms of our society in as sort of generous a way as possible. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think advice columns generally have sort of a reputation for conservatism as sort of being a place where you're sort of told, like, how to behave, which is, like, I think not everyone wants to be told how to behave. But I think what you also see is it being a space where people are sort of figuring out the norms of our society, and where it being a sort of a public forum for people to sort of, you know, for they can see it, sort of witness these norms changing.
One advice column that I tend to read when I'm eating my lunch or something like that is Dear Prudence on uh-huh. Slate. And it used to be written by someone named Mallory Ortberg, who is now Daniel Mallory Ortberg. And he has transitioned into a man. And in the column, a lot of people, it seems, feel very comfortable asking questions about being transgender and being in relationships that might not be traditional ones. And I think about people reading that who might not have people in their lives who are living those experiences. But by reading them, it gives them that insight into what that person might be feeling and experiencing.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think that it is sort of a window into the various lives many people lead. And one thing I found about the individuals who have given advice in our society over the last three centuries is that doing it sort of makes you more progressive over time. Like if you look at someone like Dr. Spock, like the very first edition of his book on babies was, you know, very conservative in terms of how he thought women should behave at home and how he saw the delegation of labor between husbands and wives. And sort of by the end of, you know, by the ninth edition, he was writing about gay couples and was writing about, you know, how to make sure that a woman can continue her career should she choose to. And I think there's something about being exposed to the hardships and questions and lifestyles of many people that, you know, that does sort of open people's eyes. And also it's sort of a comfortable way to sort of learn about how other people live.
We're talking with Jessica Weisberg about her new book, Asking for a Friend, Three Centuries of Advice on Life, Love, Money, and Other Burning Questions from a Nation Obsessed.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you read advice columns? What do you get out of them? Do you have a favorite you'd like to tell us about? And have you ever written to one? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org.
We'll pick up the conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Right now, we're picking up our conversation with Jessica Weisberg. Her new book is Asking for a Friend, Three Centuries of Advice on Life, Love, Money, and Other Burning Questions from a Nation Obsessed.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a regular reader of an advice column in a newspaper or online? Do you put yourself more in the position of a person asking for advice or the one giving it? Have you ever followed the advice of a columnist when you weren't sure what to do? What is it that people like, and I guess we Americans like it more than others, what do we like about reading about other people's troubles? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org.
Jessica, as you researched these advice columnists from very different time periods, did you see any common personality traits that might indicate who is drawn to becoming an advice columnist?
That's a great question. Yeah, I think so. I mean, a lot of them are really idealists. Like, they really believe that they can make the world a better place. And they are also people with maybe not as much self-awareness as some others. I try to say that generously, but just people who are like able to put themselves in a position of like kind of great potential embarrassment. Like it's a public platform where you're telling people what to do and the stakes are real and you're giving real people advice on really serious issues. So there's people with like a lot of confidence in their point of view and maybe not always that much self-awareness. But like a lot of idealism, one thing I was really struck by in the book was that a lot of them, you know, are trying to help their individual readers, but they're also trying to make society a better place. And you really see that in, you know, like I mentioned William Alcott earlier, like he wanted to help you live till you were 100, but he also wanted to end slavery. And he wanted to make the world better by people being vegetarians. And Benjamin Franklin, who I also write about in the book, like he wanted to help you make money and be more productive, but he also was saying all these things so that American society would be a more industrious place. So you really see people who want to change the world and have a very particular view on how to do it.
Part of the title of your book is Advice on Life, Love, Money, and Other Burning Questions. One of the things I wondered is, as you look through the history of advice columns and the topics that were covered, did some broad topics seem really consistent that people wanted guidance on regardless of the century they were living in? And, you know, were they often the same, just adapted for the times?
Oh, absolutely. It's always been really hard to tell if someone likes you back. Like, it's just always been really hard. And like, you know, just questions about love and sex and relationships have always really troubled people. It's never been being vulnerable in a relationship has never been easy.
And I'm sure that, you know, things have changed as, like you mentioned, women entered the workforce in large numbers in the 20th century. But I bet there were always, whether you were, you know, a woman working on the farm alongside your husband and raising your children, or a woman working in a work World War II factory, there was work-life balance to think about.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think a lot of women have been grappling with similar kinds of guilt, even if like the equation of what makes them feel guilty has changed over time.
So who has been the target audience over these last three centuries? Were they writing specifically for one part of society, or did advice columnists always think that their words of wisdom could benefit everyone?
That's a great question. I think one thing I really have seen as I looked at the history of advice columnists is that early advice columnists were really writing for as broad an audience as possible. And, you know, they were also writing in the 20th century for major newspapers with millions of readers who were trying to hit as all Americans as much as possible. And as time goes on, you see that people's audiences are sort of becoming more targeted. And especially on the internet, you see audiences becoming sort of micro-targeted and sort of people seeking advice and giving advice to people who sort of demographically resemble themselves. But in the 20th century, you know, like Ann Landers and Dear Abby, they didn't really have much competition at the time. They were the advice columnists of that era.
And so do you see that trend continuing where, as you said, there are, first of all, a lot more places to find advice being given on the internet because the overhead is a lot lower than printing it in a paper or some other form? Do you think it's going to become more and more targeted? And are we losing something with that?
I've thought a lot about that. I think that trend is certainly going to continue, certainly the way it's sort of continued with all media. I think in general, like the media has become more of a sort of a space for targeted audiences. And the advice column is very much part of the history of the media. I think it'll continue on that trend. And I think that the advantage of that, of course, is that it gives you an opportunity to find advice from people who maybe have more similar experiences to you. If you are a transgender person, there's more transgender people giving advice. And now at Slate, there's a transgender person being given a great big platform. I think that's a huge advantage of it, that there's sort of more voices and more perspectives now on the internet because the overhead is lower. And then, you know, I think a certain disadvantage is that there's sort of a less of a shared norm or a shared values. And I think that sort of we see that in our culture beyond advice columns right now. I feel like there is a sort of fragmentation in our political and cultural life right now. And sort of the change in advice columns reflects that change more generally.
We're talking with Jessica Weisberg about her new book, Looking at the History of Advice Columns and Americans' Fascination with It. You can join in at 800-642-1234. And advice columns and columnists have also made it into novels and movies and TV. Can you give us some examples of that, Jessica?
Sure. The famous one is Miss Lonely Hearts, the book that which is about an advice columnist who pretends to be like a very emotionally available woman when in fact he's sort of compulsive alcoholic man, and he writes these very cheesy letters to people experiencing deep sadness in their lives, and when in fact he's experiencing sadness himself that he's sort of refusing to deal with. And I think part of that portrayal sort of has created this idea of the advice columnist as sort of a hypocrite or as someone who's giving advice that he or she himself is unable to follow. And I think that you see that a little bit when you look at actual real advice columnists over the era. There's Dr. Spock, for instance, had some troubles with his own home life and sort of conflicts with his children. But in general, I have found at least that the vast majority of the advice columnists in the book were really trying to sort of live their best life and were very open to sort of sharing their vulnerabilities and doing the best they could. And in a lot of cases, really sharing with their readers when they slipped up and fell and weren't able to follow their own advice.
Well, and one of the things that I've noticed have happened with, for instance, Ann Landers or Dear Abby, they would give some advice and then they would get huge pushback from their readers, and they would often publish those and say, you know, I gave this advice and it's been pointed out that maybe I hadn't thought it through. And, you know, here's what I would say now. And that always struck me as, you know, a pretty humble thing to admit to.
Absolutely. I think that's a sign of a really good advice column of someone who can sort of admit that their ideas are changing and that they're living in a fluid society and that norms are changing and the right thing to do is changing and that they don't know everything. And I think one thing that's sort of interesting about Dear Abby and Ann Landers in particular is that as time went on, like sort of studies show that people were like fewer of the letters that arrived to them were letters to Ann Landers and Dear Abby, and more of them were responses to other column, sort of other letters that had previously appeared in their column. And that had, what they did is they really fostered a community as much as sort of creating an advice column just for themselves. And that think about how rare that was at the time, again, before the internet, for largely women, because that was their target audience, to be able to communicate with each other about all sorts of difficult major issues that they were facing in their lives.
Why do you think Americans in particular are so drawn to getting advice this way from a stranger who may or may not have any professional training or background in counseling?
I think it's a few things. One, I think it just sort of reflects the sort of American culture of optimism that, you know, with a little bit of advice and a point in the direction, we can do anything. So I think there's something very American about our love of advice. I think that it also sort of reflects the fact that we live in a society where we have more choices and to do things differently than maybe our parents did, and that we might need to seek advice outside of our immediate community. Maybe if you're the first person to go to college in your family, it's easier to seek advice from a stranger than it is from your parents. And I think that sort of the idea that we have more options in our society would bring people to advice columnists. And then, of course, the fact that we have a country without an organized religion. I think that also allows people to sort of seek wisdom in lots of different places.
Well, Jessica, thanks so much for joining us today. It was really interesting.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jessica Weisberg is an award-winning writer and producer. Her new book is called Asking for a Friend, 3 centuries of advice on life, love, money, and other burning questions from a nation obsessed. And you can keep the conversation going on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tell us if you enjoy advice columns.